You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
It's led me to think that this is a far better way for people to get proper justice for what happened to them and proper reconciliation so that both sides can move on in many situations rather than having a claim prosecuted and the person imprisoned. I mean, sometimes it will be important to prosecute the person and send them to prison. But in many situations where women particularly, but also men, are sexually violated without their consent, it is actually a lot more constructive to engage in that type of civil process than it is in a criminal process.
Right, so what is the process of that? Are people aware that this option exists when going through these kinds of cases? And
well, at the moment, there isn't a great deal of awareness, and I guess one of the reasons is that if the person refuses to engage at a mediation or a negotiation and settle it, and I have done a number of those where it's been very successful for both sides. I'm not saying there isn't ongoing consequences, but it's been successful. If they fight it the whole way, then you go to a hearing, and the same problems that happen in the criminal process can happen for an accused person. And for a victim, someone who has been assaulted, and that they have to give evidence in open court. And they come under a huge amount of character attack. People gang up on them in terms of other family members will get involved and give evidence against them, and it can be extremely traumatic. So basically we need to look at ways of making it more palatable for someone to seek justice after they have been sexually assaulted. Because a sexual assault or a rape goes on in the person's life, it's so psychologically traumatising. It's hanging around in their psyche for often the rest of their lives and altering their ability to be a happy, joyful, creative person in the world forever. And, you know, the world at the moment needs all of us to be free from psychological damage so that we can sort out some of the climate change problems, for example, in the world. So it's looking at ways that we can solve this quite heinous crime, because we know it has huge consequences for people who are raped and sexually assaulted. I think at least the research shows at least only one in five people who are raped or assaulted will report it to the police. And I believe that number is a lot less. There's far less people reporting to the police because it's just, there's no justice at the moment. The process is so traumatic and difficult. So we need to, as a community, all look at other ways in which we can resolve these cases outside of the current adversarial, harsh system. For example, one young woman lawyer told me over summer that she was in a case last year where the woman who had been raped was subject to cross-examination from five different lawyers because there were five men involved. So traumatic. So we've got, and one of my recommendations is that we actually get rid of juries and we have judge-only trials for rape, and we have probably a panel of two judges, possibly some lay people sitting with them to hear it, because juries have it got, just like the general public, carry a whole lot of rape stuff about them. About she asked for it, she deserved it, she wasn't a virgin, the way she was dressed. And so we need to, you know, I think until society is fully educated, also the fact is that it's unusual for a woman to want to scream and yell, because it's such a violation. They often just go into trauma and powerlessness, and yet juries think if you haven't screamed and yelled, then there's something wrong with you, and it can't have been a real rape. So the community holds so many missed misconceptions that have been proven in research not to be correct. But that's why we have a lower conviction rate for rape and sexual assault than we do for a lot of other or all other crimes that people commit. And I'm sure that the whole Māori justice system has got a potential Māori justice system which is sort of rehabilitation based or really confronting the person who's, at the moment, the person who's confronted in our adversarial system is not the accused, it's the victim. They are confronted, they are on trial, and the accused can even decide not to give any evidence. They just sit there watching their victim have to prove that it happened to her. So I think we need to profoundly change the way we look at dealing with these types of cases.
Oh, I wanted to go back, if that's okay, just briefly, why these attitudes exist in the first place, or why this sort of burden of proof exists, and why that kind of process of the courts is what it is today.
Well, the justice that we have in New Zealand comes from British justice, and the jury system originally was a great thing because you could be tried by your peers. But now, I mean, who are your peers? You know, there might be people who are like you, and they will judge because they know what it's like to be like you. But nowadays, you know, we have people who may have absolutely no experience or understanding of what it's like to be in a particular culture, a particular age, a particular ethnicity, and also socioeconomic issues are huge because there's such a big gap between those who have and those who have not, which is only growing. So there's a profound misunderstanding of people, and so that's one problem now with the jury system. But the other problem is that there has been, traditionally, you know, we live in a patriarchy where it has always been the male's perspective on sex that has dominated the justice system for years, rather than the female perspective. And although there's been a lot of research, a lot of advocacy, a lot of big improvements in trying to understand the perspective of what it's like to be sexually violated or assaulted, and why you behave the way you do, why you don't make a complaint at the first available opportunity, which is one of the tests. So we've still got a lot of hangover from a male-dominated, male perspective of how sex encounters are in the world. So we have a lot of rape myths around, such as she asked for it, she wanted it, no meant yes, I genuinely believed she wanted it even if she didn't. All those types of issues, because consent is such a huge issue. And so we need people, judges can cut through a lot of that prejudice if they're properly trained, a lot more than juries can. And what that article showed, the Sunday Star Times article, the woman said the jury were more worried about whether she was a virgin, which is completely irrelevant. They're not thinking about whether he's a virgin. So I think it would be constructive to get rid of juries for rape cases and sexual violence cases.
It almost seems, I mean, if the, you know, technical definition of a jury being a group of your peers, if yeah. you were judging a sexual assault case, you'd expect that entire jury to have experience of sexual assault to fully be able to make those decisions, which
that's a really, really good point. But I've seen a male juror recently talking about how the fact there was a woman who had been on the jury was raped, and she was biased and she shouldn't have been there. And in fact, you're right. You're completely right. It's the opposite. I think that's a very good point that you've made.
But I guess, yeah, going back to the civil prosecution, or even those ideas around and kopapa Māori aspects of dealing with trauma, and having to face the person that has done the harm, and the person that has been harmed, which can be very difficult. I know that that's another element of not wanting to face those people or be in the same room, but that, I mean, being forced to do that in a criminal court as opposed to a safe environment of your kind of choice, and those, is that what the civil way?
We should be able to make the environment a lot safer, And, I mean, the police have done wonderful work since the Louise Nicholas issues came up, in the sense that I've seen the rooms that a victim's interviewed in, and they've got a couch and a table and they're very relaxed. And the victim is filmed for the first interview from someone in another room. You know, so it's you can do a lot to improve the giving of testimony. And then instead of, like, she in the case, she may have to repeat it time after time after time again what happened to her, trying to be tripped up. Really, a lot of it should be only once, that you give that first interview and that's the interview that they decide. I do think that, you know, of course I believe that we've got to protect innocent people from being proven guilty. So I'm not saying I know all the answers. I think you've got to be exploring them. But I don't think you have to have the people in the same room together. And in some of the cases that I've settled, that didn't happen either. It can be done by negotiation. It's very much dependent on the individual person, what they're able to cope with and what they're not able to cope with. But
it's in their hands, right, rather than in the court's hands.
They've got to have a lot more control than they have at the moment. And even as a start, I would recommend that if a plaintiff wanted, and so in this inquisitorial method that I would suggest, you do not have, the counsel, the accused person, is not allowed to cross-examine. They put their questions to the judges, and the judges ask them. So they're not confronting, challenging, accusing, you're a liar, but they're just testing the evidence by exploring, you know, areas where the evidence doesn't seem to fit. So it's another whole, it's a different mode of questioning. It's, it's around just testing and exploring the evidence with the person. Rather than you are not telling the truth when you say this, are you? Whereas the inquirer would be saying, look, there's some, I'm just confused about what you're saying about this. Can you explain that again? But then how did this happen? You know, it's a totally different way that the person experiences it. And I do have some experience of this because I used to work at the Human Rights Commission in the 90s where they had an inquisitorial process for dealing with sexual harassment. And a lot of women, the harassment turned out often to be rape and sexual assault. They wouldn't go to court, but they were quite keen to go through that process. And it was up to them whether they confronted the man personally. But if we, after doing the investigation, if we found the case had substance, then we invited the accused to try and settle it. And that was on the terms that the plaintiff wanted. The accused person didn't want to settle and said, it's lies, I'm not going to say a thing because it's not true. Then it could go through to a formal adversarial hearing. But at least there's a chance to start off with where there's a process that's not such, you know, so traumatic and so confrontational, so adversarial, for a person accused who has been the victim of assault. I do want to also say I've acted for 8 different men who have been sexually assaulted when they were children. You know, a lot of men are subject to assault too, and the same things we say about women, in fact, sometimes are worse for men because it's so shameful, because not only have you been raped, but your masculinity's been defiled. That they can't even get to the door. They're even behind women often in getting to the door of making these complaints.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually not such a gendered issue. It's really an issue of justice and stopping this terrible, terrible crime that is basically breaking so many people psychologically and destroying them as adults. So they're not good mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles, and they're not so good at their work that they're carrying this horrible semi-depression or closed offness their whole lives because they haven't had a chance to heal and resolve from what's happened.
Do you think that we are in a time of change where people are willing to actually explore these options?
I do. And I was heartened actually by that, the Sunday Star Times article, to see there's such a consensus in the community that we've got to look at changing these things. Now, I understand, you know, the Criminal Bar Association is made up of defence lawyers, and they do a very important job of, you know, testing the system and making sure that the innocent aren't accused. And they're probably naturally very wary of change, because they might see it as, you know, putting their people at a disadvantage. But I think we must engage in a process within the legal community, but within society as a whole, that says, let's try this a different way. We must do it, because it's cruel, it's brutal, it's inhumane, and it's not helping resolve the awful burdens that so many people are carrying their whole lives because of an unresolved sexual assault that happened to them.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.